choose to appear.
Raphael shook his head. For a moment, his eyes lingered on Clary, a look she really didn't like, and then he turned his gaze to Jocelyn, and his smile widened.
"You," he said, "Valentine's wife. Others of my kind who fought with you at the uprising told me of you. I admit I never thought I would see you myself."
Jocelyn inclined her head. "Many of the Night Children fought very bravely then. Does your presence here indicate that we might fight alongside each other once again?" It was odd, Clary thought, to hear her mother speak in that cool and formal way. And yet it seemed natural to Jocelyn. As natural in its way as sitting on the ground in ancient overalls holding a paint-splattered brush.
"I hope so," Raphael said.
And his gaze brushed Clary again like the touch of a cold hand.
"We have only one requirement, one simple and small request. If that is honored, the Night Children of many lands will happily go to battle at your side."
"The council seat," said Luke. "Of course, it can be formalized. The documents drawn up within the hour."
"Not," said Raphael, "the council seat. Something else."
"Something else?" Luke echoed blankly.
"What is it? I assure you if it's in our power."
"Oh, it is." Raphael's smile was blinding. "In fact, it is something that is within the walls of this hall as we speak."
He turned and gestured gracefully toward the crowd.
"It is the boy Simon that we want," he said. "It is the Daylighter."
The tunnel was long and twisting, switchbacking on itself over and over as if Jace were crawling through the entrails of an enormous monster. It smelled like wet rock and ashes and something else, something dank and odd that reminded Jace ever so slightly of the smell of the Bone City. At last, the tunnel opened into a circular chamber. Huge stalactites, their surfaces as burnished as gems, hung down from a ridged stony ceiling high above. The floor was as smooth as if it had been polished, alternating here and there with arcane patterns of gleaming inlaid stone. A series of rough stalagmites circled the chamber. In the very center of the room stood a single massive quartz stalagmite, rearing up from the floor like a gigantic fang, patterned here and there with a reddish design. Peering closer, Jace saw that the signs of the stalagmite were transparent, the reddish pattern the result of something swirling and moving inside it, like a glass test tube full of colored smoke. High above, light filtered down from a circular hole in the stone, a natural skylight. The chamber had certainly been a product of design rather than accident. The intricate patterns tracing the floor made that much obvious. But who would have hollowed out such an enormous underground chamber, and why? A sharp caw echoed through the room, sending a shock through Jace's nerves. He ducked behind a bulky stalagmite, dousing his witchlight, just as two figures emerged from the shadows at the far end of the room and moved toward him, their heads bent together in conversation. It was only when they reached the center of the room and the light struck them that he recognized them. Sebastian and Valentine. Hoping to avoid the crowd, Simon took the long way back toward the dais, ducking behind the rows of pillars that lined the sides of the hall. He kept his head down as he went, lost in thought. It seemed strange that Alec, only a year or two older than Isabel, was heading off to fight in a war, and the rest of them were going to stay behind. And Isabel seemed calm about it. No crying, no hysterics. It was as if she'd expected it. Maybe she had. Maybe they all had. He was close to the dais steps when he glanced up and saw, to his surprise, Raphael standing across from Luke, looking his usual near-expressionless self. Luke, on the other hand, looked agitated. He was shaking his head, his hands up in protest. And Jocelyn, beside him, looked outraged. Simon couldn't see Clary's face. Her back was to him, but he knew her well enough to recognize her tension just from the set of her shoulders. Not wanting Raphael to see him, Simon ducked behind a pillar, listening. Even over the babble of the crowd, he was able to hear Luke's rising voice.
"It's out of the question," Luke was saying. "I can't believe you'd even ask."
"And I can't believe you would refuse.
Raphael's voice was cool and clear, the sharp, still high voice of a young boy. It is such a small thing.
It is not a thing, Clary sounded angry. It's Simon. He's a person.
He's a vampire, said Raphael, which you seem to keep forgetting.
Aren't you a vampire as well? Asked Jocelyn, her tone as freezing as it had been every time Clary and Simon had ever gotten in trouble for doing something stupid. Are you saying your life has no worth?
Simon pressed himself back against the pillar. What was going on? My life has great worth, said Raphael. Being, unlike yours, eternal. There is no end to what I might accomplish. Well, there is a clear end where you are concerned. But that is not the issue. He is a vampire, one of my own, and I am asking for him back.
You can't have him back, Clary snapped. You never had him in the first place. You were never even interested in him either, till you found out he could walk around in daylight.
Possibly, said Raphael, but not for the reason you think.
He cocked his head, his bright, soft eyes dark and darting as a bird's.
No vampire should have the power he has, he said, just as no shadow hunter should have the power that you and your brother do. For years, we have been told that we are wrong and unnatural, but this is unnatural.
Raphael, Luke's tone was warning. I don't know what you were hoping for, but there's no chance we'll let you hurt Simon.
But you will let Valentine and his army of demons hurt all these people, your allies?
Raphael made a sweeping gesture that encompassed the room.
You will let them risk their lives at their own discretion, but won't give Simon the same choice? Perhaps he would make a different one than you will.
He lowered his arm. You know we will not fight with you otherwise. The Night Children will have no part in this day. Then have no part in it, said Luke. I won't buy your cooperation with an innocent life. I'm not Valentine.
Raphael turned to Jocelyn. What about you, Shadow Hunter? Are you going to let this werewolf decide what's best for your people?
Jocelyn was looking at Raphael as if he were a roach she'd found crawling across her clean kitchen floor. Very slowly, she said, If you lay one hand on Simon, vampire, I'll have you chopped into tiny pieces and fed to my cat. Understand? Raphael's mouth tightened.
Very well, he said. When you lie dying on Brosselin Plain, you may ask yourself whether one life was truly worth so many.
He vanished. Luke turned quickly to Clary, but Simon was no longer watching them. He was looking down at his hands. He had thought they would be shaking, but they were as motionless as a corpse's. Very slowly, he closed them into fists. Valentine looked as he always had, a big man in modified Shadow Hunter gear, his broad, thick shoulders at odds with his sharply planed, fine-featured face. He had the mortal sword strapped across his back along with a bulky satchel. He wore a wide belt with numerous weapons thrust through it. Thick hunting daggers, narrow dirks, and skinning knives. Staring at Valentine from behind the rock, Jace felt as he always did now when he thought of his father. A persistent familial affection, corroded through with bleakness, disappointment, and mistrust. It was strange seeing his father with Sebastian, who looked different. He wore gear as well, and a long silver-hilted sword strapped at his waist. But it wasn't what he was wearing that struck Jace as odd. It was his hair. No longer a cap of dark curls, but fair, shining fair, a sort of white gold. It suited him, actually, better than the dark hair had. His skin no longer looked so startlingly pale. He must have dyed his hair to resemble the real Sebastian Verloc. And this was what he really looked like. A sour, roiling wave of hatred coursed through Jace, and it was all he could do to stay hidden behind the rock and not lunge forward to wrap his hands around Sebastian's throat. Hugo cawed again and swooped down to land on Valentine's shoulder. An odd pang went through Jace. Seeing the raven in the posture that had become so familiar to him over the years he'd known Hodge, Hugo had practically lived on the tutor's shoulder, and seeing him on Valentine's felt oddly foreign, even wrong, despite everything Hodge had done. Valentine reached up and stroked the bird's glossy feathers, nodding as if the two of them were deep in conversation. Sebastian watched, his pale eyebrows arched.
"Any word from Alicante?"
he said as Hugo lifted himself from Valentine's shoulder and soared into the air again, his wings brushing the gem-like tips of the stalactites.
"Nothing as comprehensible as I would like," Valentine said.
The sound of his father's voice, cool and unruffled as ever, went through Jace like an arrow. His hands twitched involuntarily, and he pressed them hard against his sides, grateful for the bulk of the rock hiding him from view.
"One thing is certain. The clave is allying itself with Lucian's force of downworlders."
Sebastian frowned.
"But Malachi said..."
"Malachi has failed."
Valentine's jaw was set. To Jace's surprise, Sebastian moved forward and put a hand on Valentine's arm. There was something about that touch, something intimate and confident, that made Jace's stomach feel as if it had been invaded by a nest of worms. No one touched Valentine like that. Even he would not have touched his father like that.
"Are you upset?" Sebastian asked,
and the same tone was in his voice, the same grotesque and peculiar assumption of closeness.
"The clave is further gone than I had thought. I knew the Lightwoods were corrupted beyond hope, and that sort of corruption is contagious. It's why I tried to keep them from entering Idris. But for the rest to have so easily had their minds filled with Lucian's poison, when he is not even Nephilim..."
Valentine's disgust was plain, but he didn't move away from Sebastian. Jace saw with growing disbelief, didn't move to brush the boy's hand from his shoulder.
"I am disappointed. I thought they would see reason. I would have preferred not to end things this way."
Sebastian looked amused.
"I don't agree," he said. "Think of them, ready to do battle, riding out to glory, only to find that none of it matters, that their gesture is futile. Think of the looks on their faces," his mouth stretched into a grin.
"Jonathan," Valentine sighed, "this is ugly necessity. Nothing to take delight in."
"Jonathan?" Jace clutched at the rock, his hands suddenly slippery. Why would Valentine call Sebastian by his name? Was it a mistake? But Sebastian didn't look surprised.
"Isn't it better if I enjoy what I'm doing?" Sebastian said. "I certainly enjoyed myself in Alicante. The Lightwoods were better company than you led me to believe, especially that Isabel. We certainly parted on a high note, and as for Clary..."
Just hearing Sebastian say Clary's name made Jace's heart skip a sudden, painful beat.
"She wasn't at all like I thought she'd be," Sebastian went on petulantly. "She wasn't anything like me."
"There is no one else in the world like you, Jonathan. And as for Clary, she has always been exactly like her mother."
"She won't admit what she really wants," Sebastian said.
"Not yet. But she'll come around." Valentine raised an eyebrow.
"What do you mean, come around?"
Sebastian grinned, a grin that filled Jace with an almost uncontrollable rage. He bit down hard on his lip, tasting blood.
"Oh, you know," said Sebastian, "to our side. I can't wait. Tricking her was the most fun I've had in ages."
"You weren't supposed to be having fun. You were supposed to be finding out what it was she was looking for. And when she did find it, without you, I might add, you let her give it to a warlock. And then you failed to bring her with you when you left, despite the threat she poses to us. Not exactly a glorious success, Jonathan."
"I tried to bring her. They wouldn't let her out of their sight, and I couldn't exactly kidnap her in the middle of the Accords Hall."
Sebastian sounded sulky.
"Besides, I told you. She doesn't have any idea how to use that rune power of hers. She's too naive to pose any danger."
"Whatever the clave is planning now, she's at the center of it," Valentine said.
"Hugin says as much. He saw her there on the dais in the Accords Hall. If she can show the clave her power..."
Jace felt a flash of fear for Clary, mixed with an odd sort of pride. Of course she was at the center of things. That was his Clary. Then they'll fight, said Sebastian, which is what we want, isn't it? Clary doesn't matter. It's the battle that matters.
You underestimate her, I think, Valentine said quietly.
I was watching her, said Sebastian. If her power was as unlimited as you seem to think, she could have used it to get her little vampire friend out of his prison, or save that fool Hodge when he was dying.
Power doesn't have to be unlimited to be deadly, Valentine said.
And as for Hodge, perhaps you might show a bit more reserve regarding his death, since you're the one who killed him. He was about to tell them about the angel. I had to.
You wanted to. You always do.
Valentine took a pair of heavy leather gloves from his pocket and drew them on slowly.
Perhaps he would have told them, perhaps not. All those years he looked after Jace in the Institute and must have wondered what it was he was raising.
Hodge was one of the few who knew there was more than one boy. I knew he wouldn't betray me. He was too much of a coward for that.
He flexed his fingers inside the gloves, frowning.
More than one boy? What was Valentine talking about? Sebastian dismissed Hodge with a wave of his hand. Who cares what he thought? He's dead and good riddance. His eyes gleamed blackly. Are you going to the lake now?
Yes. You're clear on what must be done?
Valentine jerked his chin toward the sword at Sebastian's waist.
Use that. It's not the mortal sword, but its alliance is sufficiently demonic for this purpose.
I can't go to the lake with you? Sebastian's voice had taken on a distinct whining tone. Can't we just release the army now?
It's not midnight yet. I said I would give them until midnight. They may yet change their minds.
They're not going to.
I gave my word. I'll stand by it.
Valentine's tone was final.
If you hear nothing from Malachi by midnight, open the gate.
Seeing Sebastian's hesitation, Valentine looked impatient.
I need you to do this, Jonathan.
I can't wait here for midnight. It'll take me nearly an hour to get to the lake through the tunnels, and I have no intention of letting the battle drag on very long. Future generations must know how quickly the Clave lost and how decisive our victory was.
It's just that I'll be sorry to miss the summoning. I'd like to be there when you do it.
Sebastian's look was wistful, but there was something calculated beneath it, something sneering and grasping and planning and strangely, deliberately cold. Not that Valentine seemed bothered. To Jace's bafflement, Valentine touched the side of Sebastian's face, a quick, undisguisedly affectionate gesture, before turning away and moving toward the far end of the cavern, where thick clots of shadows gathered. He paused there, a pale figure against the darkness.
Jonathan, he called back, and Jace glanced up, unable to help himself. You will look upon the angel's face some day. After all, you will inherit the mortal instruments once I am gone. Perhaps one day you too will summon Raziel.
I'd like that, Sebastian said, and stood very still as Valentine, with a final nod, disappeared into the darkness. Sebastian's voice dropped to a half-whisper.
I'd like it very much, he snarled. I'd like to spit in his bastard face.
He whirled, his face a white mask in the dim light.
You might as well come out, Jace, he said. I know you're here.
Jace froze, but only for a second. His body moved before his mind had time to catch up, catapulting him to his feet. He ran for the tunnel entrance, thinking only of making it outside, of getting a message, somehow, to Luke. But the entrance was blocked. Sebastian stood there, his expression cool and gloating, his arms outstretched, his fingers almost touching the tunnel wall.
Really, he said. You didn't actually think you were faster than me, did you?
Jace skidded to a halt. His heart beat unevenly in his chest like a broken metronome, but his voice was steady.
Since I'm better than you in every other conceivable way, it did stand to reason.
Sebastian just smiled. I could hear your heart beating, he said softly, when you were watching me with Valentine. Did it bother you?
That you seem to be dating my dad? Jace shrugged. You're a little young for him, to be honest.
What? For the first time since Jace had met him, Sebastian seemed flabbergasted. Jace was able to enjoy it for only a moment, though, before Sebastian's composure returned. But there was a dark glint in his eye that indicated he hadn't forgiven Jace for making him lose his calm. "I wondered about you sometimes," Sebastian went on in the same soft voice. "There seemed to be something to you, on occasion. Something behind those yellow eyes of yours. A flash of intelligence, unlike the rest of your mud-stupid adoptive family. But I suppose it was only a pose, an attitude. You're as foolish as the rest, despite your decade of good upbringing." "What do you know about my upbringing?" "More than you might think," Sebastian lowered his hands. "The same man who brought you up brought me up. Only he didn't tire of me after the first 10 years. "What do you mean?" Jace's voice came out in a whisper. And then as he stared at Sebastian's unmoving, unsmiling face, he seemed to see the other boy as if for the first time. The white hair, the black anthracite eyes, the hard lines on his face, like something chiseled out of stone, and he saw in his mind the face of his father as the angel had showed it to him, young and sharp and alert and hungry, and he knew.
"You," he said.
"Valentine's your father. You're my brother." But Sebastian was no longer standing in front of him. He was suddenly behind him, and his arms were around Jace's shoulders as if he meant to embrace him, but his hands were clenched into fists. "Hail and farewell, my brother," he spat, and then his arms jerked up and tightened, cutting off Jace's breath. Clary was exhausted. A dull, pounding headache, the after-effect of drawing the Alliance rune, had taken up residence in her frontal lobe. It felt like someone trying to kick a door down from the wrong side. "Are you all right?" Jocelyn put her hand on Clary's shoulder. "You look like you aren't feeling well." Clary glanced down and saw the spidering black rune that crossed the back of her mother's hand, the twin of the one on Luke's palm. Her stomach tightened. She was managing to deal with the fact that within a few hours her mother might actually be fighting an army of demons, but only by willfully pushing down the thought every time it surfaced. "I'm just wondering where Simon is." Clary rose to her feet. "I'm going to go get him." "Down there?" Jocelyn gazed worriedly down at the crowd. It was thinning out now, Clary noted, as those who had been marked flooded out the front doors into the square outside. Malachi stood by the doors, his bronze face impassive as he directed downworlders and shadow hunters where to go. "I'll be fine." Clary edged past her mother and Luke toward the dais steps. "I'll be right back." People turned to stare as she descended the steps and slipped into the crowd. She could feel the eyes on her, the weight of the staring. She scanned the crowd, looking for the Lightwoods or Simon, but saw nobody she knew. And it was hard enough seeing anything over the throng, considering how short she was. With a sigh, Clary slipped away toward the west side of the hall, where the crowd was thinner. The moment she neared the tall line of marble pillars, a hand shot out from between two of them and pulled her sideways. Clary had time to gasp in surprise, and then she was standing in the darkness behind the largest of the pillars, her back against the cold marble wall, Simon's hands gripping her arms.
"Don't scream, okay? It's just me," he said.
"Of course I'm not going to scream. Don't be ridiculous."
Clary glanced from side to side, wondering what was going on. She could see only bits and pieces of the larger hall, in between the pillars.
"But what's with the James Bond spy stuff? I was coming to find you anyway."
"I know. I've been waiting for you to come down off the dais. I wanted to talk to you where no one else could hear us." He licked his lips nervously. "I heard what Raphael said, what he wanted."
"Oh, Simon." Clary's shoulders sagged. "Look, nothing happened. Luke sent him away."
"Maybe he shouldn't have," Simon said. "Maybe he should have given Raphael what he wanted."
She blinked at him.
"You mean you? Don't be stupid. There's no way."
"There is a way." His grip on her arms tightened. "I want to do this. I want Luke to tell Raphael that the deal is on, or I'll tell him myself."
"I know what you're doing," Clary protested, "and I respect it and I admire you for it. But you don't have to do it, Simon. You don't have to. What Raphael's asking for is wrong, and nobody will judge you for not sacrificing yourself for a war that isn't yours to fight."
But that's just it, Simon said. What Raphael said was right. I am a vampire, and you keep forgetting it. Or maybe you just want to forget. But I'm a downworlder, and you're a shadow hunter, and this fight is both of ours.
But you're not like them.
I am one of them.
He spoke slowly, deliberately, as if to make absolutely sure that she understood every word he was saying.
And I always will be. If the Downworlders fight this war with the Shadowhunters, without the participation of Raphael's people, then there will be no council seat for the Night Children. They won't be a part of the world Luke's trying to create. A world where Shadowhunters and Downworlders work together, are together. The vampires will be shut out of that. They'll be the enemies of the Shadowhunters. I'll be your enemy.
I could never be your enemy.
It would kill me, Simon said simply. But I can't help anything by standing back and pretending I'm not part of this. And I'm not asking your permission. I would like your help. But if you won't give it to me, I'll get Maya to take me to the vampire camp anyway, and I'll give myself up to Raphael. Do you understand?
She stared at him. He was holding her arm so tightly she could feel the blood beating in the skin under his hands. She ran her tongue over her dry lips. Her mouth tasted bitter.
What can I do, she whispered, to help you?
She looked up at him incredulously as he told her. She was already shaking her head before he finished, her hair whipping back and forth, nearly covering her eyes.
No, she said. That's a crazy idea, Simon. It's not a gift. It's a punishment.
Maybe not for me, Simon said.
He glanced toward the crowd, and Clary saw Maya standing there, watching them, her expression openly curious. She was clearly waiting for Simon.
Too fast, Clary thought. This is all happening much too fast.
It's better than the alternative, Clary.
No.
It might not hurt me at all. I mean, I've already been punished, right? I already can't go into a church, a synagogue. I can't say holy names. I can't get older. I'm already shut out from normal life. Maybe this won't change anything.
But maybe it will.
He let go of her arms, slid his hand around her side, and drew Patrick's stele from her belt. He held it out to her.
Clary, he said, do this for me, please.
She took the stele with numb fingers and raised it, touching the end of it to Simon's skin, just above his eyes. The first mark, Magnus had said. The very first. She thought of it, and her stele began to move the way a dancer begins to move when the music starts. Black lines traced themselves across his forehead like a flower unfolding on a speeded-up roll of film. When she was done, her right hand ached and stung, but as she drew back and stared, she knew she had drawn something perfect and strange and ancient, something from the very beginning of history. It blazed like a star above Simon's eyes as he brushed his fingers across his forehead, his expression dazzled and confused.
I can feel it, he said, like a burn.
I don't know what'll happen, she whispered. I don't know what long-term side effects it'll have.
With a twisted half-smile, he raised his hand to touch her cheek.
Let's hope we get the chance to find out.
Chapter 19. Peniel. Maya was silent most of the way to the forest, keeping her head down and glancing from side to side only occasionally, her nose wrinkled in concentration. Simon wondered if she was smelling their way, and he decided that although that might be a little weird, it certainly counted as a useful talent. He also found that he didn't have to hurry to keep up with her, no matter how fast she moved. Even when they reached the beaten-down path that led into the forest and Maya started to run, swiftly, quietly, and staying low to the ground, he had no trouble matching her pace. It was one thing about being a vampire that he could honestly say he enjoyed. It was over too soon. The woods thickened, and they were running among the trees, over scuffed, thick-rooted ground dense with fallen leaves. The branches overhead made lace-like patterns against the starlit sky. They emerged from the trees in a clearing strewn with large boulders that gleamed like square white teeth. There were heaped piles of leaves here and there, as if someone had been over the place with a gigantic rake.
Raphael!
Maya had cupped her hands around her mouth and was calling out in a voice loud enough to startle the birds out of the treetops high overhead.
Raphael, show yourself!
Silence. Then the shadows rustled. There was a soft pattering sound like rain hitting a tin roof. The piled leaves on the ground blew up into the air in tiny cyclones. Simon heard Maya cough. She had her hands up as if to brush the leaves away from her face, her eyes. As suddenly as the wind had come up, it settled. Raphael stood there, only a few feet from Simon. Surrounding him was a group of vampires, pale and still as trees in the moonlight. Their expressions were cold, stripped down to a bare hostility. He recognized some of them from the Hotel du Mort, the petite Lily and the blonde Jacob, his eyes as narrow as knives, but just as many of them he had never seen before. Raphael stepped forward. His skin was sallow, his eyes ringed with black shadow, but he smiled when he saw Simon.
Daylighter, he breathed. You came.
I came, Simon said. I'm here, so it's done.
It's far from done, Daylighter.
Raphael looked toward Maya.
Lycanthrope, he said. Return to your pack leader and thank him for changing his mind. Tell him that the Night Children will fight beside his people on Brosselin Plain.
Maya's face was tight. Luke didn't change. Simon interrupted her hastily.
It's fine, Maya. Go.
Her eyes were luminous and sad.
Simon, think, she said. You don't have to do this.
Yes, I do. His tone was firm. Maya, thank you so much for bringing me here. Now go.
Simon.
He dropped his voice.
If you don't go, they'll kill us both, and all this will have been for nothing. Go, please.
She nodded and turned away, changing as she turned so that one moment she was a slight human girl, her bead-tied braids bouncing on her shoulders, and the next she had hit the ground running on all fours, a swift and silent wolf. She darted from the clearing and vanished into the shadows. Simon turned back to the vampires and almost shouted out loud. Raphael was standing directly in front of him, inches away. Up close, his skin bore the telltale dark traceries of hunger. Simon thought of that night in the Hotel du Mort, faces appearing out of shadow, fleeting laughter, the smell of blood, and shivered. Raphael reached out to Simon and took hold of his shoulders, the grip of his deceptively slight hands like iron.
Turn your head, he said, and look at the stars. It will be easier that way.
So, you are going to kill me, Simon said.
To his surprise, he didn't feel afraid, or even particularly agitated. Everything seemed to have slowed down to a perfect clarity. He was simultaneously aware of every leaf on the branches above him, every tiny pebble on the ground, every pair of eyes that rested on him.
What did you think?
Raphael said, a little sadly, Simon thought.
It's not personal, I assure you. It's as I said before. You are too dangerous to be allowed to continue as you are. If I had known that you'd become...
You'd never let me crawl out of that grave, I know, said Simon.
Raphael met his eyes.
Everyone does what they must to survive. In that way, even we are just like humans.
His needle teeth slid from their sheaths like delicate razors.
Hold still, he said. This will be quick.
He leaned forward.
Wait, Simon said.
And when Raphael drew back with a scowl, he said it again with more force.
Wait, there's something I have to show you.
Raphael made a low hissing sound.
You had better be doing more than trying to delay me, Daylighter.
I am. There's something I thought you should see.
Simon reached up and brushed the hair back from his forehead. It felt like a foolish, even theatrical gesture. But as he did it, he saw Clary's desperate white face as she stared up at him, the stele in her hand, and thought, well, for her sake at least, I've tried. The effect on Raphael was both startling and instantaneous. He jerked back as if Simon had brandished a crucifix at him, his eyes widening.
Daylighter, he spat. Who did this to you?
Simon only stared. He wasn't sure what reaction he'd expected, but it hadn't been this one.
Clary, Raphael said, answering his own inquiry. Of course. Only a power like hers would allow these... a vampire, marked. And with a mark like that one...
A mark like what?
Said Jacob, the slender blonde boy standing just behind Raphael. The rest of the vampires were staring as well, with expressions that mingled confusion and a growing fear. Anything that frightened Raphael, Simon thought, was sure to frighten them too.
This mark, Raphael said, still looking only at Simon. He's not one of those from the Grey Book. It is an even older mark than that. One of the ancients, drawn by the Maker's own hand.
He made as if to touch Simon's forehead, but didn't seem quite able to bring himself to do it. His hand hovered for a moment, then fell to his side.
Such marks are mentioned, but I've never seen one, and this one.
Simon said, Therefore, whosoever slayeth Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And the Lord set a mark upon Cain, lest any finding him should kill him. You can try to kill me, Raphael, but I wouldn't advise it.
The mark of Cain? Jacob said in disbelief. This mark on you is the mark of Cain?
Kill him, said a red-headed female vampire who stood close to Jacob. She spoke with a heavy accent. Russian, Simon thought, though he wasn't sure.
Kill him anyway.
Raphael's expression was a mix of fury and disbelief.
I will not, he said. Any harm done to him will rebound upon the doer sevenfold. That is the nature of the mark. Of course, if any of you would like to be the one to take that risk, by all means be my guest.
No one spoke or moved.
I thought not, said Raphael.
His eyes raked Simon.
Like the evil queen in the fairy tale, Lucian Greymark has sent me a poisoned apple.
I suppose he hoped I would harm you and reap the punishment that would follow. No, Simon said hastily. No. Luke didn't even know what I'd done. His gesture was made in good faith. You have to honor it.
And so you chose this?
For the first time, there was something other than contempt, Simon thought, in the way Raphael was looking at him.
This is no simple protection spell, Daylighter. Do you know what Cain's punishment was?
He spoke softly, as if sharing a secret with Simon.
And now thou art cursed from the earth. A fugitive and a wanderer shalt thou be.
Then, Simon said, I'll wander, if that's what it comes to. I'll do what I have to.
All this, said Raphael. All this for Nephilim.
Not just for Nephilim, said Simon. I'm doing this for you, too, even if you don't want it.
He raised his voice so that the silent vampires surrounding them could hear him.
You were worried that if other vampires knew what had happened to me, they'd think Shadowhunter blood could let them walk in the daylight, too. But that's not why I have this power. It was something Valentine did, an experiment. He caused this, not Jace. And it isn't replicable. It won't ever happen again.
I imagine he is telling the truth, said Jacob, to Simon's surprise. I've certainly known one or two of the night children who've had a taste of Shadowhunter in the past. None of them developed a fondness for sunlight.
It was one thing to refuse to help the Shadowhunters before, said Simon, turning back to Raphael. But now that they've sent me to you...
He let the rest of the sentence hang in the air unfinished.
Don't try to blackmail me, Daylighter, said Raphael. Once the Night Children have made a bargain, they honor it, no matter how badly they are dealt with.
He smiled slightly, needle teeth gleaming in the dark.
There is just one thing, he said. One last act I require from you to prove that indeed you acted here in good faith.
The stress he put on the last two words was weighted with cold.
What's that? Simon asked.
We will not be the only vampires to fight in Lucian Greymark's battle, Raphael said. So will you.
Jace opened his eyes on a silver whirlpool. His mouth was filled with bitter liquid. He coughed, wondering for a moment if he was drowning, but if so, it was on dry land. He was sitting upright with his back against a stalagmite, and his hands were bound behind him. He coughed again and salt filled his mouth.
He wasn't drowning, he realized, just choking on blood.
Awake, little brother?
Sebastian knelt in front of him, a length of rope in his hands, his grin like an unsheathed knife.
Good. I was afraid for a moment that I'd killed you a bit too early.
Jace turned his head to the side and spat a mouthful of blood onto the ground. His head felt as if a balloon were being inflated inside it, pressing against the interior of his skull. The silvery whirling above his head slowed and stilled to the bright pattern of stars visible through the hole in the cave roof.
Waiting for a special occasion to kill me? Christmas coming?
Sebastian gave Jace a thoughtful look.
You have a smart mouth. You didn't learn that from Valentine. What did you learn from him? It doesn't seem to me that he taught you much about fighting, either.
He leaned closer.
You know what he gave me for my 9th birthday?
A lesson. He taught me that there's a place on a man's back where if you sink a blade in, you can pierce his heart and sever his spine all at once.
What did you get for your 9th birthday, little angel boy? A cookie?
9th birthday? Jace swallowed hard.
So tell me, what hole was he keeping you in while I was growing up? Because I don't remember seeing you around the manor.
I grew up in this valley. Sebastian jerked his chin toward the cave exit. I don't remember seeing you around either, come to think of it. Although I knew about you.
I bet you didn't know about me.
Jay shook his head.
Valentine wasn't much given to bragging about you. I can't imagine why.
Sebastian's eyes flashed. It was easy to see now the resemblance to Valentine. The same unusual combination of silver-white hair and black eyes. The same fine bones that in another, less strongly molded face would have looked delicate.
I knew all about you, he said.
But you don't know anything, do you?
Sebastian got to his feet.
I wanted you alive to watch this, little brother, he said. So watch, and watch carefully. With a movement so fast it was almost invisible, he drew the sword from its sheath at his waistline. It had a silver hilt, and like the mortal sword, it glowed with a dull dark light. A pattern of stars was etched into the surface of the black blade. It caught the true starlight as Sebastian turned the blade and burned like fire.
Jace held his breath.
He wondered if Sebastian merely meant to kill him, but no, Sebastian would have killed him already while he was unconscious, if that were his intention. Jace watched as Sebastian moved toward the center of the chamber, the sword held lightly in his hand, though it looked to be quite heavy. His mind was whirling. How could Valentine have another son? Who was his mother? Someone else in the circle? Was he older or younger than Jace? Sebastian had reached the huge red-tinged stalagmite in the center of the room. It seemed to pulse as he approached, and the smoke inside it swirled faster. Sebastian half-closed his eyes and lifted the blade. He said something, a word in a harsh-sounding demon language, and brought the sword across, hard and fast in a slicing arc. The top of the stalagmite sheared away. Inside, it was hollow as a test tube, filled with a mass of black and red smoke, which swirled upward like gas escaping a punctured balloon. There was a roar, less a sound than a sort of explosive pressure. Jace felt his ears pop. It was suddenly hard to breathe. He wanted to claw at the neck of his shirt, but he couldn't move his hands. They were tied too tightly behind him. Sebastian was half hidden behind the pouring column of red and black. It was coiling, swirling upward.
Watch, he cried, his face glowing.
His eyes were alight, his white hair whipping on the rising wind, and Jace wondered if his father had looked like that when he was young. Terrible and yet somehow fascinating.
Watch and behold Valentine's army.
His voice was drowned out then by the sound. It was a sound like the tide crashing up the shore, the breaking of an enormous wave, carrying massive detritus with it, the smashed bones of whole cities, the onrush of a great and evil power. A huge column of twisting, rushing, flapping blackness poured from the smashed stalagmite, funneling up through the air, pouring toward and through the torn gap in the cavern roof. Demons.
They rose shrieking, howling and snarling, a boiling mass of claws and talons and teeth and burning eyes.
Jace recalled lying on the deck of Valentine's ship as the sky and earth and sea all around turned to nightmare. This was worse. It was as if the earth had torn open and hell had poured through. The demons carried a stench like a thousand rotting corpses. Jace's hands twisted against each other, twisted until the ropes cut into his wrists as they bled. A sour taste rose in his mouth, and he choked helplessly on blood and bile as the last of the demons rose and vanished overhead, a dark flood of horror blotting out the stars. Jace thought he might have passed out for a minute or two. Certainly there was a period of blackness during which the shrieking and howling overhead faded, and he seemed to hang in space, pinned between the earth and the sky, feeling a sense of detachment that was somehow peaceful. It was over too soon. Suddenly he was slammed back into his body, his wrists in agony, his shoulders straining backward, the stench of demons so heavy in the air that he turned his head aside and retched helplessly onto the ground. He heard a dry chuckle and looked up, swallowing hard against the acid in his throat. Sebastian knelt over him, his legs straddling Jace's, his eyes shining. "It's all right, little brother," he said. "They're gone." Jace's eyes were streaming, his throat scraped raw. His voice came out a croak. "He said midnight. Valentine said to open the gate at midnight. It can't be midnight yet. I always figure it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission in these sorts of situations." Sebastian glanced up at the now empty sky. "It should take them 5 minutes to reach Brosselin Plain from here. Quite a bit less time than it will father to reach the lake. I want to see some Nephilim blood spilled. I want them to writhe and die on the ground. They deserve shame before they get oblivion." "Do you really think that Nephilim have so little chance against demons? It's not as if they're unprepared." Sebastian dismissed him with a flick of his wrist. "I thought you were listening to us. Didn't you understand the plan? Don't you know what my father's going to do?" Jay said nothing. "It was good of you," said Sebastian, "to lead me to Hodge that night. If he hadn't revealed that the mirror we sought was Lake Lynn, I'm not sure this night would have been possible. Because anyone who bears the first two mortal instruments and stands before the mortal glass can summon the angel Raziel out of it, just as Jonathan Shadowhunter did 1,000 years ago. And once you've summoned the angel, you can demand of him one thing, one task, one favor." "A favor?" Jace felt cold all over. "And Valentine is going to demand the feet of the Shadowhunters at Brosselin?" Sebastian stood up. "That would be a waste," he said. "No, he's going to demand that all Shadowhunters who have not drunk from the mortal cup, all those who are not his followers, be stripped of their powers. They will no longer be Nephilim. And as such, bearing the marks they do," he smiled, "they will become forsaken. Easy prey for the demons, and those downworlders who have not fled will be quickly eradicated." Jace's ears were ringing with a harsh, tinny sound. He felt dizzy. "Even Valentine," he said. "Even Valentine would never do that." "Please," said Sebastian. "Do you really think my father won't go through with what he's planned?" "Our father," Jace said. Sebastian looked down at him. His hair was a white halo. He looked like the sort of bad angel who might have followed Lucifer out of heaven. "Pardon me," he said with some amusement. "Are you praying?" "No. I said our father. I meant Valentine. Not your father. Ours." For a moment, Sebastian was expressionless. Then his mouth quirked up at the corner and he grinned. "Little angel boy," he said. "You're a fool, aren't you? Just like my father always said." "Why do you keep calling me that?" Jace demanded. "Why are you blathering about angels?" "God," said Sebastian, "you don't know anything, do you? Did my father ever say a word to you that wasn't a lie?" Jace shook his head. He'd been pulling at the ropes binding his wrists.
but every time he jerked at them, they seemed to get tighter. He could feel the pounding of his pulse in each of his fingers.
How do you know he wasn't lying to you?
Because I am his blood. I am just like him. When he's gone, I'll rule the clave after him.
I wouldn't brag about being just like him if I were you.
There's that, too. Sebastian's voice was emotionless. I don't pretend to be anything other than I am. I don't behave as if I'm horrified that my father does what he needs to do to save his people, even if they don't want, or, if you ask me, deserve saving. Who would you rather have for a son, a boy who's proud that you're his father, or one who cowers from you in shame and fear?
I'm not afraid of Valentine, said Jace.
You shouldn't be, said Sebastian. You should be afraid of me. There was something in his voice that made Jace abandon his struggle against the bindings and look up. Sebastian was still holding his blackly gleaming sword. It was a dark, beautiful thing, Jace thought, even when Sebastian lowered the point of it so that it rested above Jace's collarbone, just nicking his Adam's apple. Jace struggled to keep his voice steady.
So now what? You're going to kill me while I'm tied up? Does the thought of fighting me scare you that much?
Nothing. Not a flicker of emotion passed across Sebastian's pale face.
You, he said, are not a threat to me. You're a pest. An annoyance. Then why won't you untie my hands?
Sebastian, utterly still, stared at him. He looked like a statue, Jace thought. Like the statue of some long-dead prince. Someone who died young and spoiled. And that was the difference between Sebastian and Valentine. Though they shared the same cold marble looks, Sebastian had an air about him of something ruined, something eaten away from the inside.
I'm not a fool, Sebastian said,
and you can't bait me. I left you alive only long enough so that you could see the demons. When you die now, and return to your angel ancestors, you can tell them there is no place for them in this world anymore. They've failed the clave, and the clave no longer needs them. We have Valentine now.
You're killing me because you want me to give a message to God for you?
Jay shook his head, the point of the blade scraping across his throat.
You're crazier than I thought.
Sebastian just smiled and pushed the blade in slightly deeper. When Jay swallowed, he could feel the point of it denting his windpipe.
If you have any real prayers, little brother, say them now.
I don't have any prayers, said Jace. I have a message, though, for our father. Will you give it to him?
Of course, Sebastian said smoothly.
But there was something in the way he said it, a flicker of hesitation before he spoke, that confirmed what Jace was already thinking.
You're lying, he said. You won't give him the message because you're not going to tell him what you've done. He never asked you to kill me, and he won't be happy when he finds out. Nonsense. You're nothing to him.
You think he'll never know what happened to me if you kill me now, here. You can tell him I died in the battle, or he'll just assume that's what happened. But you're wrong if you think he won't know. Valentine always knows.
You don't know what you're talking about, Sebastian said, but his face had tightened.
Jace kept talking, pressing home his advantage.
You can't hide what you're doing, though. There's a witness.
A witness? Sebastian looked almost surprised, which Jace counted as something as a victory.
What are you talking about?
The raven, Jace said. He's been watching from the shadows. He'll tell Valentine everything.
Hugin?
Sebastian's gaze snapped up. And though the raven was nowhere to be seen, Sebastian's face, when he glanced back down at Jace, was full of doubt.
If Valentine knows you murdered me while I was tied up and helpless, he'll be disgusted with you, Jace said.
And he heard his own voice drop into his father's cadences, the way Valentine spoke when he wanted something, soft and persuasive. He'll call you a coward. He'll never forgive you. Sebastian said nothing. He was staring down at Jace, his lips twitching and hatred boiled behind his eyes like poison.
Untie me, Jace said softly. Untie me and fight me. It's the only way.
Sebastian's lip twitched again, hard, and this time Jace thought he had gone too far. Sebastian drew the sword back and raised it, and the moonlight burst off it in 1,000 silver shards, silver as the stars, silver as the color of his hair. He bared his teeth, and the sword's whistling breath cut the night air with a scream as he brought it down in a whirling arc. Clary sat on the steps of the dais in the Hall of Accords, holding the stele in her hands. She had never felt quite so alone. The hall was utterly, totally empty. Clary had looked everywhere for Isabel once the fighters had all passed through the portal, but she hadn't been able to find her. Aline had told her that Isabel was probably back at the Penhallows' house, where Aline and a few other teenagers were meant to be looking after at least 12 children under fighting age. She'd tried to get Clary to go there with her, but Clary had declined. If she couldn't find Isabel, she'd rather be alone than with near strangers. Or so she'd thought. But sitting here, she found the silence and the emptiness becoming more and more oppressive. Still, she hadn't moved. She was trying as hard as she could not to think of Jace, not to think of Simon, not to think of her mother or Luke or Alec. And the only way not to think, she had found, was to remain motionless and to stare at a single square of marble on the floor instead, counting the cracks in it over and over. There were 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. She finished the count and started again from the beginning. 1. The sky overhead exploded. Or at least that was what it sounded like. Clary threw her head back and stared upward through the clear roof of the hall. The sky had been dark a moment ago. Now it was a roiling mass of flame and blackness, shot through with an ugly orange light. Things moved against that light. Hideous things she didn't want to see. Things that made her grateful to the darkness for obscuring her view. The occasional glimpse was bad enough. The transparent skylight overhead rippled and bent as the demon host passed, as if it were being warped by tremendous heat. At last there was a sound like a gunshot, and a huge crack appeared in the glass, spider-webbing out into countless fissures. Clary ducked, covering her head with her hands as glass rained down around her like tears. They were almost to the battlefield when the sound came, ripping the night in half. One moment the woods were as silent as they were dark. The next moment the sky was lit with a hellish orange glow. Simon staggered and nearly fell. He caught at a tree trunk to steady himself and looked up, barely able to believe what he was seeing. All around him, the other vampires were staring up at the sky, their white faces like night-blooming flowers, lifting to catch the moonlight as nightmare after nightmare streaked across the sky.
"You keep passing out on me," Sebastian said. "It's extremely tedious."
Jace opened his eyes. Pain lanced through his head. He put his hand up to touch the side of his face, and realized his hands were no longer tied behind him. A length of rope trailed from his wrist. His hand came away from his face, black.
Blood, dark in the moonlight.
He stared around him. They were no longer in the cavern. He was lying on soft dirt and grass on the valley floor, not far from the stone house. He could hear the sound of the water in the creek, clearly close by. Knotted tree branches overhead blocked some of the moonlight, but it was still fairly bright.
"Get up," Sebastian said. "You have 5 seconds before I kill you where you are."
Jay stood as slowly as he thought he could get away with. He was still a little dizzy. Fighting for balance, he dug the heels of his boots into the soft dirt, trying to give himself some stability.
"Why did you bring me out here?"
"2 reasons," Sebastian said. 1, I enjoyed knocking you out. 2, it would be bad for either of us to get blood on the floor of that cavern, trust me. And I intend to spill plenty of your blood." Jace felt at his belt and his heart sank. Either he'd dropped most of his weapons while Sebastian was dragging him through the tunnels, or, more likely, Sebastian had thrown them away. All he had left was a dagger. It was a short blade, too short, no match for the sword. "Not much of a weapon, that." Sebastian grinned, white in the moon-dazzled darkness.
"I can't fight with this," Jace said,
trying to sound as quavering and nervous as he could.
What a shame.
Sebastian came closer to Jace, grinning. He was holding his sword loosely, theatrically unconcerned, the tips of his fingers beating a light rhythm on the hilt.